Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So why didn't your wife mention that she was a rape victim raising another victim's son?
It had nothing to do with Christopher. It happened 5 years ago, before we were married.
Well, that would have been our case. Did Gwen not report it?
Christopher! Play nice, kiddo. She reported it. We lived in Jersey City then.
Did they catch the guy?
No. You better pray they never do.
Gwen met Caitlin in therapy, but she told Detective Tutuola that it was your idea to take Christopher in.
It was. Gwen told me that Caitlin was having a rough time raising him, and she should have known better. I like to fix things. That's how Gwen and I got together. After she was attacked, I went over there to fix her locks, look in on her. We fell in love.
City, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. These are their stories.
Hey guys, welcome to Munch My Benson. My name is Adam. I've been a extremely wet New York City. It's been raining for like 24 hours straight and supposed to rain for the next 24 hours going forward. So I got that to look forward to. Of course, I'm joined on the line by Josh up in the North Country. How are things up there?
Well, it's Mother's Day weekend, so we're going up to St. Cloud.
Yeah.
It's also my sister's younger child is turning 5. Nice. And
on the 8th?
On the 8th.
Yeah, that's my wedding anniversary, Josh.
Everybody's just doing stuff on the 8th.
Exactly.
Both of their kids were, one was 5'8", one was 8'8".
8'8" is actually Megan and mine first date anniversary.
Nice.
So that's weird.
Yeah. And then it's also my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, his birthday was like on Tuesday, I think.
Nice.
It's all coming together.
Yeah, their family's got a lot of celebrations going on, I guess.
Yeah.
Nice.
We're going up there for that. Leave tomorrow morning.
That's so cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been alone over here. And of course, you know, Josh has been trying to convince me to update my Mac OS because I'm the kind of guy that I think that usually upgrades are a scam, trying to screw you over in one way or the other. And usually I'm found out, I prove myself correct after I do it. Uh-huh. And so I spent all day yesterday, all fucking day, updating this thing to the latest Mac OS.
Tell everybody what OS you were on, though.
I was on Sierra, which is fine. It wasn't Snow Leopard, Josh. It wasn't like way back in the day. Sierra had everything I needed. I could run my fucking programs, which now like half of my apps are dead.
Yeah, if you had Adobe, it's all dead.
Yeah, Photoshop is dead, RIP. So I have to use something called GIMP now. So that'll be fun. Right. It'll take some learning. It's a freeware image manipulation program, basically.
At least you'll be able to use DaVinci Resolve now.
I can, yeah. I have, and it looks great. Now, the thing that was the real sticking point with this was that I did not have enough space on my hard drive. I have a MacBook Air, so it doesn't have tons of hard drive space. Now, it should have had more than enough space to do this, but you know, I'm going through all the folders and subfolders, and I'm looking at the storage stats on my computer in the system. Basically, files that are very difficult to touch, if at all, was taking up Over 70 gigs. That's like two or three times as much as it should take
up. But it's taking that much up because it's probably holding the different iterations of the new OSs until you got to Monterey?
No, that's not it. It took me four fucking ever to figure out what it was. And what it was that it was saving every single photo and GIF and video from every single text message I'd ever received. Something like 40 gigabytes worth of text message photos and GIFs.
I mean, I'm sure like 30 gigs were just from the text thread that we have going, the Mike Post for Life one.
Actually, you don't even know how many pictures of Max I send. So you have no idea. So
I mean, we get a fair chunk of
you get them. You get a couple, but I send dozens a day. My God, man. So like, I want to give a shout out to this thing. It took me a very long time to find this particular piece of software, but it is awesome. It is called Omni Disk Sweeper. If you have a Mac, Omni Disk Sweeper, it allows you to actually see very granularly where all the space in your hard drive is being wasted. Yeah. Because it was impossible to find this folder that was 30 gigs without it. Anyway, so I felt like I'd really climbed the mountain. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, guess what? You get to spend the next 2 hours installing the thing. So that was fun. But now I'm kind of familiar with how this crazy machine works again. I think I figured out most of my programs that don't work.
You can delete all those.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, honestly, it's just extra space I can free up.
I had to delete my entire Adobe suite that came preloaded on my fucking computer because once you switch from 32 to 64-bit, none of that shit supported.
Yeah, now there's no getting a cracked torrent of Photoshop anymore like the good old days.
Nope.
Whatever. It's
just make
Adobe.
Pike do it.
But fuck Adobe. Who cares?
Yeah, but make Pike do it.
But the thing is, he's going to pay for a subscription. I don't think you can actually have the subscription on multiple machines because they...
No. I'm saying just send the file to Pike and have him clean it up.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Well, yeah. But,
yeah.
Anyway. I mean, I guess he did just have to buy four new wheels. But
man, oh my God. Like, God damn it, this city. I tell you what.
So Adam and I get a text the other night from our mutual friend, Pike, and he sent us two photos of his fucking car sitting on the goddamn concrete because someone stole four of his fucking tires.
I mean, you know, normally you kind of like used to seeing like on cinder blocks or something like that.
Nope.
This motherfucker is just laying on the ground. Oh my God.
Like, get them cinder blocks, assholes.
There's like one like mismatched, you know, like car jack that's not even like...
That's not his, like, but clearly collapsed because there was nothing holding up any of the other part of the car.
Yeah, insane. Oh man.
So then he had to go buy wheels in a Burlington Coat Factory parking lot in New Jersey.
I don't know how he got the wheels home. I haven't asked him about this.
Yeah, I'm sure he had to rent a car.
But like, can you put fucking wheels in a rent-a-car? I don't know. I mean, I guess, but Jesus Christ. I guess he could have rented a U-Haul. That's the thing to do. Rent a U-Haul, like a pickup truck U-Haul or something.
Mm-hmm. Just even the van would work.
Yeah.
The cargo van.
The cheapest U-Haul rental that they have, the $10 a day one. But fucking hell. You know, what's funny, this is a good segue, because this episode is also very instructive and actually multiple reasons why you wouldn't want to own a car in New York City. But Pike's experience is a third one.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is kind of a landmark episode in many ways. So
it really is.
I feel like we need to just get there, you know. We have a fun episode to watch, but before we get there, are you drinking anything, Josh?
I am drinking Jameson Rocks that I'm sadly probably going to have to refill.
Mm.
I'll do it when we have to do one of our multiple breaks that we now have to do.
Yeah.
Thanks, Zoom.
It's just too damn drinkable, Josh. That's the problem with it.
I know.
I'm drinking a world-famous Narragansett lager.
So, we are watching Season 10, Episode 1.
It's called Trials.
Trials. I fucking had a typo.
Nice.
I had it as Trails. I was like, that's not right.
That's not right.
We were watching Season 10, Episode 1, Trials. We open on Rubes, wondering where their illegally parked car has been towed off to, only to nearly be splattered across the sidewalk by an erratically driven Chevy van being chased by the 5-0. The van caroms off parked cars for blocks before smashing into a Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo, its driver getting surrounded by the unis in hot pursuit. They command him to show his hands and exit the vehicle, and out hops a sassy 7-year-old boy asking, "What's your problem?"
He's so fucking sassy, guys.
So sassy. At the precinct, Elliot's dealing with a maxed out stolen credit card when in walks ADA Kim Graylick, whose entrance barely registers with the unit as Liv fields the call regarding the adolescent joyrider who claims to have absconded in said vehicle because his foster parents were abusing him. As Elliot battles with the credit card company and Liv belatedly deals with the fallout 7 months after the assault in jail that she endured before Finn saved the day back in undercover, they enter a hospital where the attending tells them that the boy doesn't show any outward signs of abuse, but that he couldn't get a good look at his asshole to see if there'd been any poop shoot trauma. As they near the gurney where the boy is supposed to be, the boy and his clothes are gone. So, as the doc goes to ask the nurses if they've seen the boy, Elliot decides to check under the gurney, where Christopher Ryan has coyly hidden himself behind a makeshift curtain of hospital bedding. The kid shows a casual disregard for any of the damage done or lives in danger during his joyride, but when the prospect of going back to that foster family is put on the table, he implores Liv and Elliot not to send him back to the home of Gwen and Noah Seibert. Munch establishes that Noah's one crime suited for a rap sheet is a decade-old punk song called Public Vagary, released before Noah turned to a commune upstate to lick his wounds. When Cragen asks what Noah is now, Finn sneers and lets us all know that Noah's even worse. Now he's a fucking capitalist. Gwen, who is, wait, is that Carol Vesey? And Noah, holy fuck. That's Dylan McKay.
Sure is.
Arrive at the precinct, and Noah, nah, fuck that. We all know he's Dylan.
He's Dylan.
Is calm and collected, just glad that no one's been hurt. But, quote, Gwen is seriously concerned that they just poured a bunch of money into converting this wrecked late model van to run off biodiesel. Mm-hmm. As the unit tries to pry the couple apart to deal with the mountains of paperwork they insist Christopher's joyride has created, Gwen immediately shows as the fragile wife who very much wants her husband in the room, while Dylan grabs the wheel for the pair of them, stating that his wife gave up her career to stay home with Christopher, who came to them supremely damaged. Dylan opines that he thinks they need to adopt Chrissy Boy, while Gwen's like, we need to throw a return to center stamp on this shitbird's forehead post-haste, because she's tired of her husband outliving their old shared life while she tends to this demon spawn. After hulking out over only getting to drink half a soda, Christopher concocts a story of a hotel pimping scene in which Gwen takes him to a special place where he strips down and gets down to business with a promise of junk food afterward. But the Lydia Hotel, where he says this is all going on, got shut down months ago. Cragen tells Liv to stall the foster parents' reunion with the boy and tells Finn to head out to the Lydia Hotel with Stabler, but Finn pushes back, asking why his transfer hasn't been processed and protesting that he doesn't work with Hothead Stabler. Cragen says he doesn't know what's holding up his 3-month-old transfer request, but that Finn and Stabler need to get to the hotel to check out the story. Tootler wander into the Lydia, where some weird drug testing operation is up and running in the dodgiest location known to man. Stabler wants to get an eager Graylick to subpoena Christopher's medical records from the testing facility, expecting that he'll be able to brush her off immediately. But she insists on tagging along, whether he wants her to or not. Of course, it's immediately discovered that he's just on experimental ADHD medication for Christopher's pre-existing condition. As they send him off with the Seiberts, Liv hands her card to Christopher, telling him to call if he feels unsafe again. Then Christopher's caseworker brings his file to the precinct, where Liv discovers that his biological mother is Caitlin Ryan, a rape victim from an old case of hers. And Caitlin? Oh, it's Darlene from Roseanne.
Exactly.
Darlene is a fucking mess, never getting over her assault, which a freshly traumatized Benson can absolutely understand. Darlene is suffering from some serious rape trauma syndrome, telling Liv that nothing, not even her survivor support group, has helped and that she simply can't take care of her child anymore. In fact, the only thing the support group was able to help with was finding another home for Christopher with one of the other rape victims in the group, Gwen fucking Seibert.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan tells Liv that taking in Christopher was his idea, and that he and Gwen fell in love while he helped her put her life back together in the wake of her attack 5 years earlier in Jersey City. As the unit laments Darlene initially failing to disclose that she had a son or that he was in the apartment when the rape occurred, they tie her rape to a string of other rapes of single mothers who the masked serial rapist accused of being bad moms while attacking them. As they try to find a common thread among the spread-out victims, Finn remembers that they'd been eyeing up a bartender for one of the other Vics, and the bar is just up the street from Darlene's apartment. As Munch tries to get Finn to open up a bar together to marry themselves in business, the bartender emerges and says he don't bone no broads with kids, and Emily rules out his voice, suggesting that it was probably the guy from a single mother dating site who stood her up a week prior to the attack, whom the unit had been unable to find. Darlene says she too was stood up on a coffee date, sourced from the same dating site. As Bensler interview the third victim, who doesn't fuck with dating sites, Elliot sees clothing from the Seibert's Haute Couture green clothing line on one of the racks in her store, which can only mean one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan McKay, Gen X teen heartthrob, is a motherfucking serial rapist, literally, and he's raising the child of one of his victims.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan scoffs at the notion that the use of his old bandmate's common name on the dating profiles could somehow be him, and then Stabler suggests, why not do a voice lineup? Darlene IDs Dylan's voice, but the other two victims can't make him, so Greylock cuts him loose, telling an incensed Liv that they best bring in the fourth victim and hope she also IDs Dylan to actually be able to make the case. Gwen comes at Darlene after the lineups, the latter unaware that Dylan was her rapist until Gwen's blow-up. The Seiberts try to leave with Christopher, only to be told to piss off and that the caseworker's en route to deal with the boy. Momentarily reunited with her son, Darlene promises Christopher that she'll do everything she can to bring him back home. As Cragen breaks the news to Finn that the transfer guy at 1PP has it out for Finn from his days back in narcotics, Elliot discovers that the person who maxed out his card is being hauled into the precinct, so Elliot bounds downstairs to teach the guy a lesson, only to be intercepted by a petulant Kathleen, asking why he had her boyfriend arrested after she took his credit card to pay for, quote, books, which Elliot knows damn well is not what was purchased. Liv gets the file on the fourth victim, who won't be able to ID Dylan's voice because she moved back to Iowa and killed herself. As Liv laments the death of a victim for whom justice was not served while they could have seen it, Munch gets a call from the lab with a DNA hit from the wet kiss Dylan laid on Christopher's cheek as they parted ways. The victim on this CODIS hit? Gwen, his fucking wife. As Elliot and Olivia haul off Dylan, Gwen doesn't believe they could possibly be arresting her rapist. Looking him in the eyes, she begs him to tell Olivia and her that he didn't do it. His response? She needs to say that she filed a false police report and that they had consensual sex.
Ouch.
Yeesh. She then asks a question she's slowly realizing is the absolute truth. You're telling me that I married my own rapist? He tells her that he loved her, and this was the only way that she ended up noticing him. She delivers a swift knee to Dylan's dong. Greylock pleads him out, using the specter of pursuing a hate crimes conviction against him to get him to take the statutory maximum sentence. Greylock asks an indifferent unit where they're going to grab drinks, only to look around and see no Olivia. Liv has gone off to a doctor to discuss her attack in prison, which has haunted her as more time has passed, and we get a, if you thought this was trauma, Liv, just wait to see what Warren Light has in store for you. Dick Wolf.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty,
and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
We've definitely been inhabiting Liv's therapy sessions a lot recently.
Yep. It's kind of wild how we're like, what, 111 episodes in, and we've seen all but one of the William Lewis episodes and Undercover. Like, yeah. We've gotten a lot of Liv trauma early.
Yeah, which means that we're going to get a lot of Rollins' sister late, right?
Yeah, yeah. Kim is just waiting in the weeds.
I was kind of bummed by the way the Dick Wolf occurred in this one because... Yeah. You know, it's like such a great scene where Dylan McKay is revealed to be the rapist. And then it's just like, I hate it when they do that, like the denouement that takes, you know, 5 minutes and it's...
Yeah, it's like 38 minutes of peak insanity. Mm-hmm. And then...
Yeah, 38 minutes of like peak stunt casting, just like wild kid actors, just marvelous subplots. And then it's just like, nope, downshift, hit the brakes, the episode's over. It's a little bit of a bummer that that happened.
Yeah, it's anticlimactic in the way that we want it to be climactic.
Uh-huh. But I mean, we're talking about an episode with Darlene and Dylan McKay in it. And
Dylan McKay rapes Darlene. And takes her kid. Raped Carol Vesey before, you know, obviously this is before she was Claire Dunphy, but whatever.
Yeah. So Josh is already teasing the bevy of big stars that are in this one.
Guest stars.
Yeah.
Boy, do we have them in this one.
I mean, and like stars, man. Like
stars.
Massive stars.
So we've already talked about Edelyn McWilliams, who's playing CSU Tech Martin. Mm. Talked about her back in Munch My Benson episode 90. We've got her blooded. We need to shoot this fast, which was talking about season 15, episode 21, Postmortem Blues.
That was the final William Lewis episode.
Yes. We have not, much to my chagrin, talked about Allison Psycho, who's playing Kathleen Stabler, but I'm going to save that for an episode where she's more prominently featured and one that doesn't already have a fuckload of notes about other guest stars.
Yeah.
First up, Luke Perry playing Dylan McKay. I mean, Noah Seibert.
Playing Pike.
playing Pike from not our friend who just had his wheels stolen, but Pike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Uh-huh. He was born in Mansfield, Ohio, and raised in Fredericktown, Ohio, to a homemaker and steel worker. His parents divorced when he was 6. His dad died of a heart attack when Luke was 14, but Luke looked more to his stepfather as a role model anyway. He moved to L.A. after high school graduation to pursue acting in 1984, working odd jobs, while only getting a featured extra role in the Twisted Sister video for Be Cruel to Your School, which I just watched. You can tell it's him. Mm-hmm. That's basically it. But he's just a student in a classroom and sort of brushes by Bobcat Goldthwait. Mm. He moved to New York after a few years in L.A., and after 256 auditions... finally got his first gig as the recurring dirt poor mechanic Ned on Loving, a soap opera that Adam and I might remember, but most of our listeners probably don't. He had a 10-episode run after that on Another World before finally landing his breakout role in Beverly Hills 90210, originally auditioning to play Steve Sanders before getting cast as Dylan McKay, a role which made him maybe the heartthrob poster boy of the early 90s. I would say definitely, but I guess you maybe have a couple other people you could mix in there.
Dylan McKay was everything back in the early days. I mean, he...
Everything.
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 At least on television. You know, there's like obviously film heartthrobs, but I don't know if anybody, you know, captured quite the zeitgeist like Dylan McKay did.
No, I mean, I probably would have done him as a kid.
When you were 11 years old.
Yeah, 11 when it came out. After moonlighting in films with parts in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Terminal Bliss, and 8 Seconds, Perry opted to leave 90210 after season 6 to try to play more adult roles. Of course, he chose to leave 90210 back when TV actors did not make the transition to film actors with ease. Look at how long it took George Clooney, and George Clooney has undeniable star power. He basically just did a few forgettable mid-90s crime indies and had a small role in The Fifth Element before returning to 90210 after two seasons away in a more limited special guest star capacity, playing out the string from 1998 until the end of the show in, what, 2000 or so. After 90210, he did a 10-episode run on Oz, starred in the post-apocalyptic Showtime series Jeremiah for two seasons, which starred alongside Malcolm Jamal Warner, co-starred in the short-lived ensemble network drama Windfall, and was main cast in the David Milch Jesus as a Surfer HBO drama John from Cincinnati, before taking this part in SVU to fully shed the skin of Dylan McKay. For the 8 years that followed this, he basically spent his days going from minor film role to guest spot on a TV show to starring in the occasional Hallmark TV movie until landing in Riverdale, where he played Archie's dad until suffering a massive ischemic stroke at his Sherman Oaks home on February 27th, 2019. He had another stroke a few days later, and his family decided to remove him from life support on March 4th, 2019, where he died at the age of 52.
It's young, man.
Yeah, it is. He was survived by his fiance, Wendy Madison Bauer, and his two children, Jack and Sophie, who were children by his first wife, Rachel Minnie Sharp. The last film he acted in was Once Upon a Time in Mexico, which was released the summer after. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, totally different.
Yeah, very different movies. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was released the summer after his death. Next up, Julie Bowen is playing Gwen Seibert. She's born in Baltimore, Maryland, to a commercial real estate developer, John Lutkemeyer Jr., and his wife, Suzanne. She was the middle of three daughters, with her sisters being noted infectious disease specialist Annie Lutkemeyer and designer Molly Lutkemeyer. I know Annie Lutkemeyer was apparently someone who would do talking head shit for
COVID.
During COVID, yeah.
Yeah.
Julie Bowen grew up in suburban Ruxton, Riderwood, Maryland, first attending Calvert School, then Garrison Forest School, Roland Park Country School, and finally St. George's School in Middletown, Rhode Island. She majored in Italian Renaissance studies at Brown, if you need to know what kind of background she comes from, because you're not doing anything with that. Spending her junior year in Florence. In college, she performed in Guys and Dolls, Stage Door, and Lemon Sky, and landed the lead role in an indie film, Five Spot Jewel. She went on to study acting at the Actors Institute. Her first big role was as the love interest in Happy Gilmore, which eventually led to a 9-episode run on ER, and a main cast role in Lawyer in a Small Town Bowling Alley Dramedy, Ed, where she played the titular character's high school obsession / love interest, Carol Vesey, for four seasons alongside Tom Cavanaugh, Michael Ian Black, Justin Long, and John Slattery. She then had a 5-episode recurring role in Lost, where Jack performed surgery on her and they eventually married through the flashbacks. She was main cast in Boston Legal for seasons 2 and 3 and was a guest star in season 5, appearing in a total of 50 episodes. She appeared in a season of Weeds right alongside this SVU guest spot and then landed the role of Claire Dunphy in Modern Family, where she appeared in 250 episodes, directing two of them and earning 6 Emmy nominations and 2 Emmys for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series.
That show's been on for so goddamn long.
It's over now.
Yeah. Wow.
Mercifully.
Yeah. It's one of those things you can put on in the background. That's the only...
I really dislike it.
I don't. I've never really been into it, but I guess I've seen a little. I don't know.
Anyway, you may have also seen her in the films Multiplicity.
Thank you.
An American Werewolf in Paris, Jumping the Broom, Horrible Bosses, Hubie Halloween, Conception, not Inception, Conception, and The Fallout. In November of 2021, her production company, Bowen & Sons, entered a first look deal with Universal Television. She suffers from bradycardia and has worn a pacemaker since her early 20s.
Interesting.
That's a abnormally low heart rate.
Yeah.
She has 3 sons with her now ex-husband, real estate investor, and software developer, Scott Phillips. Next up, Sarah Gilbert.
Yeah.
She's playing Caitlin Ryan. She was born in Santa Monica to Barbara Cohen, born Crane, and Harold Abeles. Her maternal grandfather was the creator of the Honeymooners. She has four older half-siblings, two on each side. On her mother's side, her half-siblings are Melissa Gilbert and Jonathan Gilbert, stars of Little House on the Prairie. After a few TV movies and a Kool-Aid commercial, she landed the role of the sarcastic middle child, Darlene Connor, on the hit sitcom Roseanne when she was just 13. In season 4, she wrote the story for an episode.
Damn, when she was 17 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
She wrote the story for an episode per WGA rules. Yeah. Members had to write the teleplay, but she had a story by credit. She was twice nominated for the Emmy for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series for this role, and she was deemed so integral to the show that when she went off to Yale, they worked around her schedule and did remote soundstage shoots in New York to keep her on the show.
Wow.
And that's on a multicam. Like, that's on a stage show they were doing that.
Yeah. So,
while shooting Roseanne, she dated co-star Johnny Galecki. While they were dating, she realized she was a lesbian. They're still good friends, as one would assume, given her later recurring role on The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
She had a slew of main/lead roles on short-lived sitcoms or pilots that didn't go. Welcome to New York, In the Game, Twins, Girls on the Bus, Bad Teacher, and Living Biblically. About 10 years into the post-Yale cycle of gearing up for a new show that may or may not go, she created the panel daytime talk show, The Talk, serving as an executive producer in addition to appearing as a co-host on the panel. In 2018, Roseanne started back up after 20 years off the air, but Roseanne tweeted her way off the show bearing her name,
mm-hmm.
and it returned the next season as The Connors, killing off Roseanne off-screen. It's still going 4 years after having to spin off from Roseanne. You may have also seen her in Poison Ivy, for which she was nominated for an Independent Spirit Award, Desert Blue, Light It Up, The Big Tease, High Fidelity, Riding in Cars with Boys, and Laws of Attraction. She was with TV producer Ali Adler for about 10 years, having two kids together. After parting ways with Adler, she began a relationship with former Four Non Blondes frontwoman Linda Perry.
Oh, weird.
Marrying in 2014, having a son in 2015, and eventually separating in 2019.
Man, that's a good opportunity for you to drop in some Four Non Blondes, Josh.
You know what I won't be doing? Dropping in any Four Non Blondes.
And I said, hey.
There is not a song.
What's going on, Josh? What's going on?
I don't think there's a song that I hate more than that song, which is saying a lot. I really can't deal with it when it's being played. It hurts.
I woke in the morning and I went outside and I...
Yeah, fuck off. Okay, so next up we've got Jay Head, who's playing Christopher Ryan. He was born in Hamlin, Texas, with no aorta.
Weird.
Meaning he had to have open heart surgery at 2 months and 14 months.
God damn.
Over a 3-year period, his pulmonary vein was converted into an aorta.
Damn.
Yeah. He was Reagan's hot neighbor's kid on Friday Night Lights, mm-hmm. the little brother in The Blind Side, and was in Hancock. He's acted a little as an adult, probably most notably in one episode of Yellowstone a few years back. Next up, Mary Beth Evans, who's playing Dr. Eikenberry.
Yeah.
This is the one running the study.
Yeah.
She was born in Pasadena, grew up in Orange County, graduating from Huntington Beach High School. She married cosmetic surgeon Michael Schwartz in 1985. They have 3 children together. In 1986, she joined the cast of Days of Our Lives, playing Kayla Brady. She stayed there until 1992, when she left to join the cast of General Hospital the next year, playing Catherine Bell through the end of the 90s. She left General Hospital for As the World Turns, playing Sierra Esteban Drake through 2005. In 2006, she returned to Days, reprising the role of Dr. Kayla Brady Johnson, which she is still playing till this day.
I didn't even know that Days of Our Lives was still on.
I know.
Where do you even watch it?
I don't know. All told, if IMDb is to be believed, she's appeared in 1,896 episodes of Days of Our Lives and counting.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
A lot. I tried to load that her credits on IMDb, and it just like... It didn't know what to do.
Smoke started pouring out of your computer.
Yeah. Like, if you thought rendering video was a power suck on your computer.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
It was never going to load that. Next up, we've got Lisa Strum, who's playing Tanya Majeski.
Yeah.
She's from Philadelphia. She has an MFA in acting from the University of Washington in Seattle. She's done a ton of theater work, both regionally and in New York, including her solo show, She Gone Learn. She's reprising this role for the 3rd and final time. We saw her back in Munch My Benson episode 14 playing this role. Death or Christian Entertainment was that episode, which we talked about in season 8, episode 21, Pretend. Only got this one and one more.
Interesting.
Anthony Okungboa, who is playing Dr. Bakari. He was born in London to Nigerian parents. He studied drama at Middlesex University in London, then relocated to the U.S. in 1992 for postgraduate work at the Lee Strasberg Theater and Film Institute. He moved to L.A. in 1998 after some minor guest spots in The X-Files, which, you know, this shared universe. Arliss, NYPD Blue, and The Bold and the Beautiful. He got the gig of DJ on The Ellen DeGeneres Show. He did that from 2003 to 2006, and again from 2008 to 2013. Since 2019, he's been main cast in Bob Hart's Abishola, where he plays Kofo. And lastly, I realized that we have not discussed Michaela McManus.
We haven't seen her in a long time, so
I know, but this is her first episode, and I figured it was kind of fitting. So she is obviously playing ADA Kim Graylick. She is from Warwick, Rhode Island, graduating from Tollgate High School, and then going on to graduate from Fordham. She attended NYU's graduate acting program before leaving to pursue her career in LA. She got her first break with a recurring role as Chad Michael Murray's love interest in season 5 and season 6 of One Tree Hill. Then the next season, she was main cast in SVU as Graylick. She was written out abruptly after 13 episodes, with Neil Baer telling TV Guide, "She's moved on. Sometimes the part and the actor just don't mesh. It was a mutual decision."
Yeah.
Michaela stated that it was, quote, "really tricky. The character has a lot of brain power and her vocabulary is different than mine." Graylick was called back to DC by the Justice Department midway through a case. Major Poochie vibes there. With Cabot just waltzing into a crime scene to the unit surprise. Can't wait till we get to that episode. That's going to be weird. After this, she had a recurring role on The Vampire Diaries, then was main cast in Awake, but was somehow credit only in 10 of the 13 episodes. I don't know how that works. I don't know how your main cast...
But you're only in 3 episodes.
In a 13-episode series... And you're only in 3 of them.
Oh, well.
She was main cast in Aquarius and The Village and had recurring roles in SEAL Team, The Orville, and You. She's been in the films About 50, Cafe, Funeral Kings, Into the Grizzly Maze, Love Finds You in Valentine, and The Block Island Sound, which I believe just came out like last year and is on one of the streaming services. I think it's on Netflix. She's married to TV writer... / producer Mike Daniels, who she looks to have met while working on One Tree Hill. They have at least one child.
I feel like when they were doing the casting for Graylick, they definitely remembered the "we want a model to be the ADA" bit, but they forgot that they needed somebody that sounded convincing as a lawyer. It's not that I think Michaela McManus is a bad actress. She's just not a lawyer.
Yeah.
Anyways.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So I sort of have a larger note just about where this episode's falling in. So
let's
knock that out real quick.
Yeah, definitely. Because this, especially Finn's subplot in this is...
Both Finn's and Liv's are kind of weird.
Yes.
And frankly, we shouldn't really be dealing with Liv's at this point, but somehow we are.
Yeah.
So in addition to the 2008 writer's strike depriving us of the full season order of episodes that were supposed to feature Chester Lake, that's a 19-episode season, we also suddenly get dropped back into Liv dealing with the fallout of her dick mole seeing sexual assault.
Yeah.
Now, that happened 7 months prior to the dates in this episode and was certainly not touched upon in either Closet, which was right after Undercover.
Yeah.
Or in Trade, which was the second to last episode of season
9.
Yeah. Of season 9. And the last episode of season 9 is Lake's exit.
Yeah.
which I cannot fathom them dealing with the fallout from Liv's assault there.
No.
The other one is the Robin Williams episode. Weird. There are only four after that. Weird. So, like, none of those episodes deal with this at all. It's just, like, left, like, she has the assault, and then there's, like, not really any room for her to deal with it at all.
No, we have huge stars, plus we have to get rid of Adam Beach.
Yeah. So, we're in a weird space that somehow, for the reasons that are largely tied to the writer's strike, have to be tied to the writer's strike.
That makes tons of sense.
We're dealing with this stuff way later than we should be.
Yeah.
And it seems weird, like, Liv probably wouldn't have been able to compartmentalize it to be, like, able to function for 6 months, only to have it now creep in.
Yeah.
So it's a little weird that we're dealing with this so much later. Because that was in February.
Yeah.
And this is in September. Anyway.
So, and the other thing is, Finn is furious this whole episode. He's, like, steamed.
I frankly don't even remember why.
Well, he's talking shit to Cragen and Elliot the whole time. And it's all because he blames particularly Elliot for the way that Lake left.
Oh, right. The way that Lake exited. Okay.
Yeah. And so that all has to do with the last, well, I guess with season 9, episode 19, which we haven't seen yet. But that's why Finn is so pissed off and why he's so desperate for an exit. I'm curious to see if we ever watch 10-2 or how soon we watch 10-2, if he drops it right away. Because he is really pissed off in this one. It does not seem like the kind of guy you want watching your back. If you're Elliot.
Yeah, I love how when they pull up in front of the Hotel Lydia. Yeah. Or Lydia Hotel, how abruptly he brakes.
Yeah.
Like, he just slams on the brakes and he, like, gets out of the car. And you can tell he's, like, taking it out right there and he's pissed. Uh-huh. And he's actually driving, too, so.
Yeah, there's a few times where he's like, you need to make any other calls, Elliot? You know, yeah. Stuff like that. Yeah, it's pretty funny. But yeah, that did need to come out of the way. But the cold open and the bar are really the two things that I'm focused on primarily.
Okay, so I focused on more other stuff, mm-hmm. So that's good.
Yeah.
Cold open. So we start with a dipshit who parked their car in a tow-away zone, which I'm sure you've seen people dealing with.
Josh, this cold open is a metaphor for what it is like to live in New York. Not just to what it's like to live in New York as a car owner, but the whole entire experience. Yeah. Every step you take, everything you do, there is fine print that would require some kind of, like, lifelong New Yorker license or like somebody needs to interpret for you that you didn't read that you're getting fucked for, right? Sure. Every step you take, there's some fine print that you're getting fucked for here. And also every step you take, there's something trying to kill you. So you're getting screwed and you're about to die. Whether it's you own a car and your car is getting towed or ticketed, like, all the time, or Con Ed does a meter reading and your bill is $500 when they didn't realize it was going to be that. Speaking from personal experience. you know, there's just all this shit going on that's trying to fuck you over. And there's a truck that's trying to blow through the crosswalk while there's, like, 20 people in the middle of the crosswalk. And it's like, come on, fucking man. Anyways, that is the experience here. Everything about owning a car here is a pain in the ass. Either you will get a ticket every day or your 8-year-old foster child will steal it and drive it into literally every car that he can. Uh-huh. And I gotta say, man, like, what kind of stunts budget did they have for season 10? Did they just blow it all right here? I mean,
so the dipshit who parked the car in the tow-away zone is a stuntman.
Yeah. I saw that.
And so is the cop who pulls them over.
Okay, right.
So,
on.
Like, I know they've both been driving stuntmen, so they're obviously the stuntmen in the two-car chase.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, the one sort of on camera having to dive out of the way, so the cop is behind the wheel of the van at that point. The van windows are pretty tinted, so.
Still, they played bumper cars with, I don't know, at least, like, 3 or 4 other cars.
Oh, yeah.
They did some damage.
Just parked cars. Those aren't even picture cars that they were hitting.
Yeah.
That's just life in New York. You know, one day you're going to get your car smashed by SVU.
Yeah. Or somebody. That was on Pike's fucking block, Josh. It's a quiet residential block. It's not the hood, and somebody stole 4 wheels off of that shit. Oh my god, unbelievable. Okay, so when the cops jump out, right, none of them look like cops, really. So you have three cops jump out.
One's a stuntman.
He's kind of like a tousled, lazy-looking dude look is what I would call him. That's the guy, the one who's speaking into the microphone. Then you've got another guy who has that, like, I'm a professional background actor hair. And then you've got a woman who looks like a stoned young Miriam Adelson. And none of them look like they...
I mean, whoever is getting out of the driver's seat of any of the cars, those are stunt people.
Yeah.
So those are all stunt people, and then whoever, the others are just extras.
So what happens when like Finn's driving, when Ice-T's driving for short bits?
Well, it's possible that they had that on a... It's possible they had that on a trailer. I don't remember seeing the tires at all on without a cut.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look. That's interesting. But yeah, it's possible.
I mean, it's possible he would have been driving it, because they only show him driving for like 5 feet.
Exactly.
So it's possible he would have been driving, but it almost would never happen that you're looking at an actor driving a car, unless you're talking about, you know, the noted stunt actors.
Yeah,
you know.
I've worked on a small, like a student film kind of thing where the guy wanted to do like a scene with a car, and it was like, dude, we can't do this. This is not going to work.
No.
This is insanely dangerous to be driving around trying to shoot a movie. Anyways, so the kid makes a grand entrance.
And
this,
yeah, he does.
This kid is sassy AF.
He's at 11 the entire time, except for when he's asking his caseworker for a hamburger.
Yeah.
Then he's turning on the charm.
Or at the end, when he's got that little touching moment with Darlene, where he's I do love you, mommy.
I want to know that we are going to call Darlene, Darlene, and Dylan, Dylan.
I don't know what their characters' names are. I didn't have to write the recap, so I didn't look that closely, but they're Darlene and Dylan.
Yeah. I mean, sure. Caitlin and Noah, whatever.
Yeah. Right before Graylick walks in, I think we're treated to Elliot's complaining about his credit card fees.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish we had more of these like Seinfeldian B plots, because...
See, I think this is just setting up what's going to happen with Kathleen in a couple episodes, though.
Yeah, no, it didn't wrap up, which it would have been kind of more fun if it like neatly wrapped up, right? If like Finn needs to buy an armoire and Liv's having trouble getting her nails done. She needs
and
to
the
find-
armoire is what ends up being able to tie Caitlin Ryan's apartment together.
Exactly, exactly. I wish there was a little bit more of that.
Where it all ends in a like Seinfeldian or Curb Your Enthusiasm way where all of the fucking plot lines
all the plot lines end at the same
together at the
exactly. So like the armoire that Finn bought is actually solving the case somehow,
or I guess it's going to be at the fucking psychiatrist's office that Liv's at in the very end, which is an unsatisfying button.
So this kind of got me going on a sidetrack. So you have Elliot's credit cards. Munch talks about the bar that he wants to open.
Really want that to happen.
I know. But I thought about this. Besides a few of these little notes, we don't know anything about any of the characters on SVU, Josh. We don't know anything about their hobbies. We know that Elliot's home life is a mess. I guess we kind of know about Rollins' hobbies, but do we know about any of the other characters'
Rollins'
hobbies?
Well, because Rollins' hobbies get her in Dutch with a fucking mom.
Anyhow, anyways, I just was thinking about...
Liv is into the plein air painters.
Yeah, Liv is into the plein air painters, and she's into dating men that are like intellectually beneath her.
Cassidy's into golfing at fucking... Frisbee golf courses.
Cassidy's into like lighting entire parking lots full of cars on fire, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. What else? Craigan's into AA meetings, you know,
and maybe the rodeo, because he's got that cowboy hat.
Absolutely.
Well, and Munch is just into, you know,
communism. Well, we know what Munch is into. He's into progressively larger anal plugs.
Yeah, there's that, which is cool. You know, different strokes. So Graylick really wants to drink with these people.
And they don't want to drink with her, man.
No, it's kind of saying something unintentionally, of course, that no one gives a fuck that Graylick is even there.
Hi, can I help you?
First of all, apologies. I know you were expecting me last week, but I got held up in D.C. on personal business. Long story. Tell you all about it over drinks sometime after we all get to know each other better.
Great, who are you?
Kim Graylick, lateral move from the Office of Violence Against Women. I'm your new ADA.
Sorry. Detective Stable, Special Victims.
Nice to meet you all.
Yes.
But it is indicative of the path she's going to walk down on the show, where she's met with utter indifference and then is poochied off to D.C.
Oh my God, poor thing. Yeah.
Okay, so Dylan goes neo-punk to neo-hippie to capitalist, which is kind of a sad statement, but kind of indicative of what the entire boomer generation did. You know, not neo-punk, but hippie to...
Yeah. I mean, I guess...
hippie to greedy capitalist.
Dylan McKay's
he's
more...
He's younger.
Yeah, he's more Gen X, even though he's a little old for the Gen X.
And like the very beginning of Gen X, at the point where like really he's in that weird post-boomer micro generation.
Yeah, but. Just like we're in the weird post-Gen X micro generation. Yeah. But yeah, it's the same kind of thing. There's a lot of advice in this episode, just a little aside, because I think you skipped over the hospital scene where they found the little boy.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I didn't want to talk about that.
You didn't want to talk about...
I talked about it in the recap.
Yeah.
About the rectal exam. The boy wouldn't let him look at his butthole.
Yeah, but there's just so much advice given in this episode, because in this scene, it really made me think about it, because Elliot's basically giving Liv advice on how you deal with a bratty kid in this scene. And we've already seen Elliot give us advice on how to deal with a stolen credit card. We've seen some advice on how to avoid parking tickets. That's learn what the signs mean.
Or have a badge.
Yeah, it will.
Because Finn absolutely parks right in front of the Hyden at the Lydia Hotel.
Oh, Josh, if you want to get fucking irate about cops parking, I'll take some day trips to where the precincts are and show you how they park their cars. It's fucking like
madness.
It's outrageous. It's utter disrespect for the fucking... people they're supposed to work for.
So apparently sometime around Perry's death, there's a person in the background of an episode wearing a Public Vagary shirt.
Really?
In one of the episodes of SVU.
That's cool.
Which is a nice nod.
Yeah.
But who wears a t-shirt of a band that had one song? And a band whose one song apparently was also the name of the band, because Munch says that Public Vagary is a song, and then later in the episode, they say that Public Vagary is the name of the band. So this is like some talk shit.
I would wear a Public Vagary shirt. I would also wear a talk shirt,
yeah. But...
I would wear a Citizen Dick shirt, you know, speaking of like fake bands that only have... one or two songs.
Making sure moms stay home to raise their children is super punk rock, right?
I mean, I suppose being a serial rapist...
His governing ideology does not make sense. Serial rapist, that's punk rock, I guess. But, I mean, there's a long history of fucked up shit in punk rock, but stay-at-home moms, that's not...
The thing is also, their business is like an eco-friendly fashion line, right?
Yeah.
Like, why can't they both do the fucking business from home whilst they're both raising the kid? I don't quite understand.
Oh, you have no idea what the green haute couture industry is like, Adam.
I really don't.
Really long days. So Gwen sneaks in candy to pimp him out. Which, it's too bad we know he's lying, because that would have been a hell of a twist.
Yeah.
I really wish that's where the episode went. That would have been insane. Pimping out a 7-year-old for candy.
Really, the kid had a lot of like great kind of little episodes that could have been made about him. But this Lydia Hotel thing is kind of a, like, since when are rundown flop houses used as medical testing facilities? Like,
it's just bad shit. Like, no, there's plenty of bullshit office space off in the suburbs.
Yes. Yeah. You go out into Jersey or something. I don't know. You go someplace like completely boring and bland, and it's linoleum floors and false ceilings and fucking fluorescent lights. That's where you get tested for that shit.
So pincushion guy, he gets a lot of screen time, and he's not an under 5 at all.
No.
But he's got to be kind of bummed, because he's basically just doing an exposition dump on medical trials. You can't, like, use that for your reel, can you?
Nah. I mean, like, his first little bid where he's like, oh, man, this sucks, because we're not even, like...
We're not even really making the big bucks.
Yeah, they're...
You know, we're not getting any pain out of this.
There are not even any bad side effects from this drug.
I feel bad for him, because I think he's actually kind of good as whatever this is. But, you know, it's obviously not something that led to more work.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Or led to significantly more work.
It's rough business being an actor.
Yeah. Stabler does not want Greylick with them.
No. He doesn't want Greylick around.
Here or later, I guess, because, like, her second volley asking for drinks is met with another.
Man, it's just sad. It's sad. Poor thing.
She just really wants to make friends. She's fresh from D.C.
She wants
to help
the unit.
She's tired of working for justice.
Yeah.
She's just a crusader.
She wants to get her hands wet and her feet dirty.
And maybe she's not comfortable with her vocabulary, but... you know.
Yeah, I feel like she should have probably been like one of the lady detectives on CI or something. That would have been a better role for McManus. Something like that.
Yeah.
So Darlene actually kind of has a nice apartment. I don't know if you've noticed.
It was hard to tell.
There were little touches that made it look fucked up, but most of what was actually making it look bad was just like laundry waiting to be ironed. They just like poured laundry all over the place.
Also, half-eaten food, not in dishes anymore, on the counter.
But it had very high ceilings. It was a big room. There was a very nice, like, I don't know if it was like, it was like a display cabinet, you know, like something where you put your china, something like that. It was very nice.
Or your 80 to 90 wine glasses.
Exactly.
To host your orgy.
Yeah, it's definitely a place to put your orgy glasses. Which just begs the question, right? That's a lot of people for an orgy, right? Going back many episodes. That's a lot of people.
That was why I was shocked. All right. So the episode needs the undercover flashback because it's been so fucking long since undercover happened.
Yeah.
Right before this, I am glad that Christopher really boned the Seiberts with an elevator ride with all the stops.
I did. I like that a lot.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, here's a little advice to you guys. If you ever have a little boy in an elevator and he asks to hit the buttons, he's asking to hit all of the buttons. So when you say yes, he's going to do it. So you hit the buttons and you hold him away from the buttons. That's your game plan there, guys.
So Caitlin Ryan is a second I. So hers is spelled C-A-I-T-L-Y-N. But if it was C-A-I-T-L-I-N, she would be the same name as Stacey Mastiessen's character's name in the Degrassi universe. Mm. Both the OG Degrassis and then, you know, she's back as Caitlin Ryan, the reporter who's still friends with Emma's mom and Joey. And
you think it's a nod? It's a hat tip?
I hope so, yeah. I think there's a big Degrassi fan on the staff at this point. It is kind of nice to see an apartment that's like
not super
really
nice.
A disaster.
Yeah.
We don't get to see victims in this state very often. We're usually with victims who are dealing with something a lot more fresh.
Yeah.
And this is like 2 years of like her life falling apart.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting because it is kind of like a different path to tread down. It's not common that we're coming to somebody who's kind of been failed by the justice system as a victim.
No, of course, at the apartment, Benson finds out that Caitlin gave her kid to another victim in the group. That victim's Gwen. And so then what does Benson do? She doesn't go and ask Gwen about it. She asks Dylan.
Yeah, she goes to quote-unquote Morningstar Park with Dylan, which is weird to me because, real quick, before we get into it, this location was weird to me because I get why they have to use fake addresses on streets, because they're typically it's private property. That's what you're dealing with. So sometimes if they use a real address, it's a school or a church, something like that.
Right.
But the parks are all public property. There's no reason to not say
what park you're in.
Morningside Park, which is a real park, or
instead of Morningstar.
Central Park. Yeah. Morningstar is not a real park. I'm almost 100% sure it's a playground in Riverside Park, given the topography in the background, but I didn't take the time to look at every fucking children's playground in Riverside Park, because Riverside Park is like 5 miles long. So
sure. It goes along the side of the river.
It does, as the name implies.
And the river is not short.
No, it's a big, well, it's actually, it's not a river, but I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah, it's an estuary, whatever.
It's a fjord, Josh. It's a fjord.
Sure, man. So on the playground, Christopher, total dick.
Terrible kid. Just awful kid.
Shocking. You wouldn't really think after seeing him like steal a car and bounce it off of fucking like 15 random cars before smashing into a Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo.
And then almost like throw Stabler across the fucking park when he threw the soda away.
He throws away half a soda. Yeah. Jesus Christ. When he hulks out over that soda and they have to like take him by the legs and lift him off of the ground so he's like floating like Superman or something.
Oh, I identified with that. That happens.
Can we get video next time that happens?
But yeah, that kid, I guess I've seen some kids throwing some fucking playground temper tantrums like that, but that was pretty rough.
So Benson bafflingly asks Dylan about the rape instead of Gwen. Still don't understand why she would do
just
that.
Just from an investigative perspective.
They had Luke Perry and they needed to give him another scene. Yeah. That's what the governing principle of this is. But if that happened in real life, she should be asking the fucking victim, not the person who ends up being the rapist.
Well, of course. And it just begs the question of the writing staff, like, couldn't they have figured out like a better reason to have this
scene? A different way to get him another scene?
Yeah, like...
Oh, God. So, the bartender.
Before we get to the bartender.
I love this scene, this entire scene.
It's my favorite scene. Possibly my favorite scene in the show. There's a lot of good... The last Dylan
getting kneed in the junk and the, wait, you're telling me I married my rapist. That scene probably tops this because it's so insane. But this scene is so much fun.
So I have a lot to say about this bar. So, the bar is Emily's favorite dive, as we're told. Emily being one of the victims.
Did not feel like a dive bar at all.
I'll get there. But first off, before we get to whether that was a dive bar or not, but that's what we're led to believe.
Yeah, sure.
We see a map where they show where all these people live and where the bar is. They put it on screen. Emily lives in like fucking Tribeca, like way downtown, like almost to the financial district, way downtown.
Oh, yeah. Where they show that's her it's got to be next to her work or something, but it's insane that this is her favorite bar. It's so far from her house.
This bar is like way uptown. And it's like one thing for people who live uptown to have a favorite bar that's downtown. That's a thing that makes sense because there's like tens of thousands of bars in Lower Manhattan.
Yeah.
There's a lot. But you don't go from Lower Manhattan, center of the universe, to like the relative suburbs of the Upper West Side to go to a fucking dive bar. Now, the biggest issue is when we actually get there, because remember, SVU has established this is supposed to be a dive bar. That's what they said. And then Finn and Munch get there and they walk in. And the funny thing about it is that the people that are in it, so you've got a guy at the bar who's like got long hair and he's slumped over what looks to be like a cheap lager. That guy belongs in a dive bar.
Absolutely.
The bartender.
That's the guy that I want at the bar at all times in my dive bar when I finally
own one. The guy at the bar is a dude at a dive bar. And the bartender is a dude who like pulls beers at an Irish pub, which is this is supposed to be. The name
the
was
first
like,
bartender.
The first bartender. The guy who's just
not the one that they bring out. No.
The guy who's just like, he's like polishing a glass or something and they're like, hey, where's this dude? He just like doesn't say anything.
I'll just let you guys talk about the bar you're gonna
open. That guy's a dive bar bartender.
Absolutely.
However, the bar that they're in
is not the home for either of these men.
It's a swanky wine bar. It's huge. For one thing, it has very high ceilings. It is a very large modern space with like concrete floors,
like a huge open door to the to the street.
Massive. Like, it's got like those kind of like glass pane garage doors that fold open. Right, they're giant wine casks all over as decor, and there's like walls with like thousands of wine bottles on it. This is not like locations and script were not on the same page at all.
No locations. Okay, so I think what happened, my guess is they had a dive bar lined up, and as they're doing the tech scout for the episode, the AD gets to the dive bar and they're like, we can't shoot in this bar. Like, there's no space for our cameras. And they'd already had, like, parking and everything, like, lined up.
Yeah.
And so then they're like, okay, let's scramble for another bar. And so they found this one and they hoped that no one would notice.
Yeah. They were wrong because I noticed.
Yeah, you did. And it's not a dive bar at all.
And then the other bartender comes out. And this guy is definitely like this guy is a very New York kind of guy. I feel like this guy was almost certainly probably had
his dad was a construction worker and he realized that he could work fewer hours and make the same kind of money while still leering at women and sexually harassing them on the job. So he was like, I'm gonna be a bartender.
Josh, this guy dropped like four figures at a strip club in Times Square after the Rangers Pens game last night, you know, like like this guy is definitely a New York character.
This is like the New York that we all still wish was there.
It's still there.
Well, like it's disappearing too quickly.
Well, where it is, it's moved to they live on Long Island. Dickheads. Yeah, they're
sure.
They live on Long Island,
Suffolk County. Mm-hmm. And
they're starting up clan chapters just with the Brooklyn accents.
Well, he can't be in one. This guy's clearly very Italian.
I'm sure they got their own sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, but it's not that. It's Knights of Columbus or whatever.
Last thing about this guy, he says that he cards old ladies to get a better tip, which, sure, that's a good scheme.
Absolutely.
100% buy into that scheme.
I used to do that everywhere I worked. You absolutely do that. Mm. It's better. But you do it in a way that's not as...
You don't do it. You don't say, like, you're making my job really hard tonight.
Yeah, you're making my job really hard. you don't do that.
Also... The fact that she's 34 and that constitutes an older lady, that makes me want to commit suicide, man. That's rough.
Yeah. I mean, it's nonsense, whatever. He definitely walks around telling his friends that kids are boner killers. That's who this guy is.
Just pay for a sitter, right? I mean, then you can still get into the bone zone, dog.
Nope. Nope. Even knowing a kid popped out of that...
Yeah, Jesus.
I can't even, as a joke, I can't even go as far as this guy would. I can't believe they did not come up with a name for the single mom online dating service.
I know. It's really disappointing.
This is something they do so well in a way that's amusing to both of us.
This is their forte. Not just the name. Like, I want to see a page for it.
Absolutely. Show us the website.
I want some subfolders. I want some user handles.
Baffling menus that you can choose from the drop downs.
I want some banner ads. Yeah, man, it's very disappointing.
They go visit Natalie.
Yeah, they go visit Natalie. Love this because
she's like, have you heard my accent? I don't date online.
Yeah.
Of course, that accent disappears for her last line.
I'm not lying to you. I've never done online dating.
Natalie, it's just very important. It could help us catch a rapist.
I've been hounding you for 2 years. With every humiliating detail I remember, why wouldn't I tell you that?
What about chat rooms? Or anyone you've met with the last name of Jones?
Nat, we've got a situation in the dressing rooms.
Excuse me, I'll be right back.
I have a resume pulled up, and I'm 95% sure that she is not English. The sad thing is, you know, she probably hit the British accent on that last line on a different take, but there was something fucked up about it. Yeah. This is what they had in the edit.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, hopefully no one notices, just like the bar.
Who cares? Yeah, man. Why did they need to make her English? I didn't quite understand that. So there's a prompt in this clothing boutique. The clothing boutique is a strange store, first off.
I don't even understand really what's going on there. It feels like it's not actually a store, but kind of is.
Both times I watched it, I was like, is this like an office? What is this? Is this...
Yeah, where's point of sales? Is this backstage of a fashion
That's
show?
That's what I thought it was for a minute, too. And then...
But then it's there's too much floor on the other side of it for it to be that.
And then, but yeah, and like in the back right, when we see the shot of Natalie, when we're talking to Natalie and we see her in like behind her to the right, it looks kind of like a store.
Sure.
There's like more racks. And then screen left, there's the racks with Dylan McKay's line on it. But the thing that really piques my interest with this scene is the line that the other clerk says to her.
Her assistant, I think.
Yeah. She says, Nat, we've got a situation in these dressing rooms.
Yeah.
And it's like pizza. Pizza Boy from the other episode, I think it was last week's episode, Pizza Boy folded like a slice. Like, what kind of situation in the dressing room requires a manager to come assist? Are people stealing things? Did somebody just chart themselves all over the clothes? Like, what's going on back there, man?
clothes chart would be cool. If it were later and people had better phones, I would assume that people are fucking or, you know, doing something of the sort. But, you know, no one has a phone that's good enough to.
Yeah, you can't like sneak a
you can't sneak a camera good enough.
A camcorder.
To, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, you know, they had those little ones then at this point. Was that high eight with those the kind of smaller tapes? Yeah.
Yeah.
You could film a grainy porn with those. You could sneak that in your handbag.
I guess. To what end?
It would just be hard to get a good angle, I think. I think that would be one of the biggest issues. You'd need to have one of those, like, alone tripods, you know, you can, like, hook it over the top.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, so if you thought a lineup was unreliable, wait till you get a load of a voice lineup where only one victim can tell that he's masking his voice by going all dulcet tones on the first pass and has him repeat it the right way.
I can't imagine this would hold up in any court. Like, there's just no way to me. I mean, I remember, I think that part of the OJ trial, right? Didn't it involve like a phone call and somebody talking about the voice that they heard on the other end of the line?
If it's not Mark Furman or Lance Ito or Marsha Clark, I don't remember anything that went on. And if the glove don't fit, you must acquit.
You don't remember Cato Kaelin, man? The legend?
Sure, he's from Milwaukee.
He was living the sweet life. And then all of a sudden, doing
Milwaukee proud, yeah, living in the guest house.
Yeah, he had the sweet guest house life.
But like, I don't remember the ins and outs of the trial at all.
Oh, no. It's my nightmare.
So Dylan fucks up and lays a sloppy kiss on Chrissy Boy's cheek.
Gross.
So gross. So Darlene wants a kid back, but she's really got some cleaning to do. Then we find out that Greg Burkle, that motherfucker, is burning Finn.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't like him from his days in Narco.
Burkle's wife called up Finn after they separated.
Yep.
That's too much for Burkle.
Finn got Burkled. I'm sure he's not the first, probably not the last.
All of Burkle's ex-wives just go around the precinct after they're done with him. That's just how he is.
I desperately want to know what Kathleen's tattoo was. Because she got a matching tattoo with her boyfriend. Yeah. He got it on his wrist. She got it on her inner thigh. And I just...
Probably a sharktopus, right?
I want to know what the tat was. Could have been a sharktopus. Could have been my great idea for a tattoo, which was having Poseidon emerging out of a froth of dolphins and naiads from my butt crack. That's what I've always wanted to get.
You know, the idea that I had as a young man was all aboard up the shaft of my cock, but it would also work on the inside of her thigh. Okay, I really wish we got a Munch, Finn, and Sober Craig and open up a bar spinoff show.
That would be so much fun, man. Think of all the banter that they'd have.
Oh, God.
Just make it like David Simon.
I know I put it out there that we would write with the new SVU writing staff.
I would write this show. But
I would write that show in a heartbeat.
Oh, my God.
And you know Dan Flork could be down.
Dan Flork would totally be down.
And you could do a multicam. They'd only work like one fucking night a week and then, you know, do rehearsals and whatnot.
Yeah.
Be the easiest, cushiest life possible.
No, and it'd be a half hour, 23 minutes of just delightful comedy. And you like focus on one of them each week, right? So they have like, they don't even have that much prep to do. Yeah, it'd be so much fun. Like Finn being a grandpa to Ken's kid, right? Like
to Jaden.
Yeah. Finn and Jaden. Jaden, you got retired Munch delving into the secrets of the universe.
And exposing the Illuminati also.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, you got kind of like a lone gunman kind of feel to it.
And you got
Craigan
behind the bar just fucking polishing glasses, you know, making them all nice and shiny.
Yeah.
Drinking club soda out of the 8-ounce bottles like Sam Malone used to. Mm-hmm.
He's kind of coaching out at this point probably, right? He's maybe sundowning a little bit.
Oh, no. He's the ladies' man. Craigan is pulling a lot of tail.
As he does.
The ladies love the big bald bosses.
They do.
Okay, so we get Dylan saying, Gwen, listen to me. You need to tell them what really happened.
Man, that's rough.
Gwen's like, what? Dylan, that you filed a false police report.
Oh.
Gwen, oh, God, no. And then Dylan's like, the sex we had was consensual.
Damn.
You're watching that happen and you're like, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen you do, Dylan. You've betrayed everything that I believed in.
You've really
shaken my life to its core.
Yeah. You've broken so many hearts of the ladies on screen and now you've broken America's heart, dude. And
God damn it, Dylan. God damn it.
It sucks. And then he gets kneed in the junk.
Yep. And then we get Gray like saying what her cause celeb is, and then no one will have drinks with her.
Yeah, nobody cares. They're all like, you're annoying. And then Finn goes to see not Bill Irwin. I mean, Finn. Liv goes to see not Bill Irwin.
Finn actually went to see Bill Irwin.
Probably.
They just hung out.
Yeah. I just want to see like how quickly Finn's just a willing member of the team after this, because he was not happy. This whole time.
Yeah, he is seething through this whole episode.
It kind of made it a fun one. Should we rank this thing, Josh?
I think we should.
All right. So, of course, guys, we rank these episodes every week. We have a rigorous four-part process, which we go through. We rank the overall quality of the episode, the guests therein, how problematic the episode was, and the depth and breadth of lives ruined. Now, this is like a classic stunt casting episode, right? But I'm really curious to see how we're going to rank it against last week's, which was another like all-time great stunt casting episode. I'm just excited to get to it. So should we start with the overall quality?
Yeah.
So it's fun throughout, right?
Yeah.
You got the sassy kid. You've got like stunts in the cold open. You've got Darlene.
You've got Finn and Munch trying to open up a bar.
Finn and Munch are trying to open a bar. You've got Elliot dealing with this.
Dealing with weird personal life stuff that is absurd. Like, it would be tedious normally, but it's kind of funny to watch. Uh-huh. You're seeing Finn really begrudgingly have to work with Stabler. Yeah.
You've seen everybody not give
give zero fucks about Greylock entering the picture.
Which is it's kind of hilarious because I mean she's
it's extremely hilarious.
She's like stunningly beautiful, right? And so the idea that they're just like, no, I don't want to get drinks with you, yeah, is hilarious.
Why would I drink with you? You're too attractive. Yeah, it's
a lot of fun.
Honestly, I think the only dings against it, the kid's kind of a lot to take.
The kid's a ton to take.
The kid's a lot. And that's sort of an issue related to the show's quality.
Yeah.
And then we have the button that...
The button's annoying.
It's just a little unsatisfying.
The button's a downshift.
For an episode that you had this crazy stunt casting going on.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of the craziness with the episode is kind of dependent on the stunt casting too. It's not like Wet, for instance, where
right.
the episode itself is completely ludicrous.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have like that kind of action going on, but I mean it has some of the craziest stunt casting we've ever seen, so it's definitely bringing
I still think like we're talking this is top five stunt casting
in
the show's history.
Yeah, and so that's
in the very small conversation
this is
about like what is the best memorable. This is one of them.
Yeah. Dylan McKay, yeah. Rapist. Yeah. I think this was the first post of the original.
It absolutely was. This was the genesis of all of this bullshit.
Yeah.
I think quality.
So quality, though, that's the question. So guess. Yeah,
is quality. I'm wavering between 9 and 10.
Let's look. Okay, so Possessed, obviously a 10. Wet was a 10.
Uh-huh.
Futility, that's Kevin Arnold is a power reassurance rapist, 10.
If that's a 10, this is 2.
A 9. We gave
this. No, this is a 10.
No. I'm just going for a 9.
Okay.
We gave Strange Beauty a 9 in quality. And I don't know what we were thinking when we did that, because I feel like Strange Beauty might be the craziest one we've seen. I mean, I think we can give this one a 10.
I feel completely justified.
This one actually gets dinged later on. It's not Possessed. It's not the perfect episode, but I think,
I mean, they were like, let's have Dylan McKay rape Darlene. And not only that, but we find out that his wife, he also raped her before they got together.
Yeah.
Like, it's nuts. And you're just like,
that's a
wow,
great premise.
Tip of the cap.
That's a great premise.
Yeah.
And I mean, really just bringing together really the yin and the yang of 90s television. I mean, they come together in a firm handshake here, which
America's heartthrob.
Yeah.
Dylan McKay. Raped Luke Perry.
Raped America's Darlene. Redneck daughter.
Yeah. Well, working class.
Working class. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the next category. I think this is an easy one to rank.
10.
I don't have a question. Yeah. It's 10. Obvious 10 for guests.
Yeah.
Not a question. Now, the next two, I think it's not perfect in that I don't think it reaches those lofty heights in the next two. You might disagree, but I don't think it's as problematic as some of the other episodes that we've seen.
But problematic is also the fun score.
It is, but I feel like a lot of the fun is being covered in the guests.
There's also all of the bar talk.
The bar talk is fun. Bartender. I'm not saying that it's like bad, right? I'm not saying that it's like low by any means. I'm just saying that it's not a 10.
That is not a 10.
Yeah. So if we look at Possessed had stunt casting. We're talking Devin Rattray, Taryn Manning, David Patrick Kelly. You know who all these people are. You've seen them a lot.
Yeah.
And yet it takes problematic to places that we didn't think possible. Right.
But this is also Taryn Manning, Devin Rattray, and
they're not at the level. They're not at Dylan McKay's level.
And the issue is that what they are doing in this episode is raping every single kid who thought that Dylan McKay was the shit. They're raping the notion of that.
Yeah.
And this was like,
they're raping our youth, Josh. That's what they're doing.
Just like with Kevin Arnold, they're raping our youth, and it is fucking insane. Like, Luke Perry was on the cover of every fucking teen magazine for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Every month you go into the grocery store, you go to Hudson News in the airport, or you go wherever, you're seeing Luke Perry. He is the teen heartthrob.
He sure was. Like,
it's basically him one, Jason Priestley two, and then maybe one of the dickheads from Saved by the Bell. That's it. And what they're doing here is turning that guy into a fucking serial rapist.
I agree with you. However, we're talking about
in the most fun way possible.
We're talking about a show where we've seen Steve from Sex and the City get off on chopping women's left legs off. But
Steve from Sex and the City is not Luke Perry.
I understand.
It's the massive raping of everyone's youth. They're raping the youth of an entire generation here. It's pretty incredible.
I guess what I'm saying is that I just feel like it's more like an 8 or a 9, not a 10. That's my feeling on this category.
It's a 9.
I'm fine with a 9. I'm fine with a 9, but I don't think it's...
The import of the raping of the audience's youth is impossible to like... It's almost unquantifiable.
I mean, there is another episode where this is going to come into play in a big way.
Yeah, I know. And I know what one you're talking about, and I can't wait to hit it. I
can't wait.
But that's what the...
So are you comfortable with a 9 in this category? Are you comfortable with a 9 in this category? That's my question. I want us to be on the same page when we rank these things.
I mean, honestly, I think because of what they're doing, I think it's a 10.
I mean, this is an all-timer. It deserves an all-time kind of score. It also is going to fall slightly flat on this next category.
Yes.
So it's just there's no way getting around it. Like, that one woman killed herself, but we don't know if it was because of rape trauma survivor syndrome or just because she moved back to Iowa. You know, there's two potential options there. Like, where'd she move? Davenport?
I almost spat my Jameson all over.
If it's the Quad Cities, then I totally understand, you know?
She moved to Spirit Lake. Okay. Obviously, there's fallout.
Yeah, of course.
And it's Darlene.
It's Darlene. It's like America's, you know, little
sarcastic
sister.
Sarcastic favorite dog.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. I can't believe she wrote an episode when she was 17. Wow.
That's insane to me. I mean, it's not a 10. It can't be.
No. I don't know that it can really be much more than like a 5 or a 6. There's no bodies. There's multiple victims.
There's a body. Yeah. There's the scope of what he also did with Julie Bowen is insane.
That's pretty dark. That's pretty twisted shit.
Like to have been raped. To have sort of had your life put back together.
Yeah. Oh, but...
With the help of this man who seems to be really helpful. And then he foists his rape victim's child onto you.
This is
who
the sort
happens
of thing.
To be a demon seed. And then after helping to raise this shitbird for we don't know how long, but at least
2 years, at least a year, something like that.
I think it's a year.
Yeah.
And then to find out not only is your husband your rapist, but he wants you to recant your story and say that the rape was consensual.
It's brutal.
And does it with no compunction.
No. And it's really, he slickly slides into that scene, right? Because, you know,
he slithers, I think, is the proper verb to describe what he did in the scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty gross because, you know, we kind of see him the whole time and you're like, man, that's fucking Dylan McKay right there. You know, that's like, I'm just surprised he's not wearing a white t-shirt and a leather jacket. That's the only thing that's standing out to me. But then in that scene, he really does kind of a very subtle turn from America's heartthrob to like, oh, I'm a piece of shit. but still, I think it's like a 5.
No. Because again, we're dealing with fallout, and you know what else is part of the fallout?
Josh thinks that that America's youth is part of the fallout. Yeah. Okay, so, but if we talk,
it's not a 10. It's not a 10. I won't argue that it's a 10, but I think it's a 7 or an 8.
I think it's more like a 7. Because I think we're dealing with a show where, like, you know, we give, so let's look at the last seven.
Yeah, but we're dealing with a show that doesn't have the chance to rape America's youth like they do in this episode, and they really fucking stick the landing.
Yes. So let me go back to
like generations of like, because it's not just Gen X, it's also millennials who like sort of,
all right, man, all right, okay, I'm gonna stop you right there. It can't be an eight, because we gave the Jeremy Irons totem, the second Jeremy Irons episode, we gave that
there's
one
only two victims. Well, there are three victims in that. There's one body. Yeah, there's more, Josh, victims here.
They were being raped by spoons for like 25 years.
Yeah, but none of them were Darlene,
I suppose. But ooh.
I mean, I'm not saying, what was that?
What's that?
That was an eight?
That was an eight.
Then this is an eight. This is as bad because of the element of like the incorporation of the stunt casting and what it's doing to the psyche of a viewer.
I think that's what why we gave the Fred Savage episode an eight as well. Because I think yeah, we included ourselves in the fallout.
Oh, absolutely.
So, okay. If we give this an eight, if you guys have been following along with your own handy spreadsheets, you'll know that this puts it in rarefied air. This is number two all time, next to only Possessed of all the ones that we've watched so far. It comes out with a 9.5 that puts it just above Hooked and just below Possessed.
And it should be above Hooked.
I think so.
I have no hesitation in my mind that this should be above
As far as stunt casting goes, this is legendary stunt casting shit.
This is the
You think about. I mean, and like, I always thought about the Andrew McCarthy one, but I've forgotten in my mind how much of the Andrew McCarthy episode was taken up by like bullshit screen time about the unit, like getting ready to get rid of fucking Monique Jeffries and other characters that I don't care about.
Right.
Which, for it, sucked. But this one does not have that problem.
This delivers.
This does.
Really, the only like sort of problem, I mean, kids, whatever, that's a volatile thing anyway, but the only real problem on the page is just that they didn't find a way to end it with the need of the junk.
Yeah. It should have ended right there with that Dylan McKay scene.
Because what the live scene at the end is should have been at the beginning of the cold open of the next episode.
Yeah, right? That would have been
a good point.
That's
what it would have been now.
Yeah, that would have been a nice point to put that. Now, what we also didn't need, because they're introducing Greylick, right? I feel like they had to give like Greylick a win, but I don't care whether she got a hate crime abetted.
And establish like, that the next time there's a rape.
Establish that when there's actually like going to be a courtroom scene, like where you do something like that. Just introduce her and then move on. Like, part of the reason her character didn't work is because, I mean, this is like, we didn't need to have an ADA.
This is two straight seasons where they introduced a new character that didn't work. I don't know that they could have made Greylick work with a different actress.
I don't think so either, but
Lake?
Adam Beach is a very good actor. I've seen him in lots of stuff, and
I like Adam Beach a lot.
And I liked his character. They just didn't choose to use him. And I think with like an ADA, I don't know, you use them in courtroom scenes, right? Obviously, they have to mesh with the rest of the cast, but we didn't need to have an ADA in this episode at all. Like, she didn't add anything to it besides just introducing herself, basically. Anyways, these are minor quibbles because...
And I mean, honestly, the Greylick stuff doesn't not work because it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. Except for the...
To her get drinks invite blue ball for the entire episode.
And again, it's just like, oh my God, the fact that like Finn, who's single, right?
Yeah.
And Elliot, who's not exactly
I mean, he's just dealing with his credit card bullshit.
But just in general, Elliot is not exactly the best husband, right? Like, the fact that they're not jumping at the prospect of getting drinks with Greylick is really something. Yeah.
I mean, we've said before, and we'll say again, they did get models, basically, to be the...
100. I mean,
That was the original series. That was what they did, and they carried it on into at least Cabot, and definitely picked that back up with Michaela McManus.
Yeah. I feel like they made a conscious decision to go away from that. Well, Diane Neal's a little different. Like,
Barbara's a hot piece of ass.
No, but Barbara is definitely like, they finally like decided we're going to get somebody who's just who acts like a fucking lawyer.
But Philip Winchester is back too.
Oh God.
Well, we're going to service the got to get the hunk out there. Got to get that piece of meat out to service the fans, if you know what I mean.
Wardrobe, do not put a tie on that man.
No. If you can have him have his shirt unbuttoned to his navel.
Make it happen. So obviously this is a really fun one. You have to watch this, especially like if you're some kind of Zoomer kid that's somehow fallen into our bizarre podcast. It's not going to hit as hard for you as it would for people our age, but anybody who was watching TV in the early 90s, these are beloved characters.
Anybody like in their early to mid 30s and up is going to absolutely be like, holy shit, this episode.
In 2022, nothing is like, there aren't cultural phenomenon the way that both Roseanne and 902 were.
No. This is like, because this is still when it was a monoculture. Yeah. Everyone watched 902.
Everybody watched Roseanne. Like, both of those shows were absolutely massive.
Massive hits. When, like, the amount of people watching these shows when they were on is incomprehensible in today's TV landscape.
Do you remember
like, the amount of people who watch The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Like, four times as many of those people in a country with a smaller population by a lot. Four times as many people watched Roseanne every fucking week.
Do you remember how and big a controversy?
24 episodes a season.
What, the Roseanne lesbian kiss? I don't even remember the context for it now, but it was just like, it was like the cultural battle for a month or something. It's all anybody could talk about, and that doesn't exist anymore. It exists on Twitter.
I mean, Luke Perry from 1990 to 1994 or 5 was
the dreamboat.
You can't even really comprehend what a massive star he was in the eyes of the youth.
Yeah, icon.
There really isn't an analog at this point. You know, like, the culture is so fractured now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is, like, I guess the Kardashians are kind of like that, but it's...
Only kind
not
of?
Not really. Yeah. It is. The problem is that everybody has access to whatever culture they want or whatever kind of little subculture they fall into. So that kind of stardom just doesn't exist anymore.
No, this is literally everyone. When you walked into school on Friday morning,
everybody had seen.
Everyone had watched this.
Yeah.
Cable wasn't doing original programming at this point.
No.
Like, the HBO had like a couple shows, but no one had HBO. Then you didn't have to because there wasn't anything fucking worth subscribing. This is 10 years before the fucking Sopranos.
No, HBO just showed movies.
They had First and 10 and like a couple of afterthoughts.
They had Arliss or some shit.
No good shows were on broadcast cable until The Shield in 2001.
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing. You watched fucking 90210 or whatever was on the other two channels, really, because no one, well,
no.
Three channels and then Fox. This was one of Fox's breakout hits. It was this, Married with Children, and The Simpsons.
Exactly. Go out and watch this one, guys.
So, heading over to episode.lol, where our friend Flett has built us this great randomizer. I use it. I pick my episodes of Rockford, or I pick my episodes of kind of going back through House now.
Yeah. It's a really good way to watch non-serial TV. Because going through it first to last is kind of annoying, I think. I don't need to watch every episode of Empty Nest, even though that's what I'm doing right now. But I don't need to.
You should not. So, the tape is spinning. Bill and Ted are decidedly displeased with their lot in life.
They sure are.
Oh, I hate that part.
And we have landed in season 9. The season which features our favorite.
Yeah.
We Are a Beachhead Podcast.
Indeed.
Chester Lake.
What's the episode?
Season 9, episode 10.
Huh.
Snitch.
Hopefully it's a Chester Lake focused episode.
Fingers crossed. When a polygamist's wife is murdered, he believes it's related to a recent criminal case he was testifying in, but detectives believe it may be connected to his culture.
Interesting. I think I remember this one. Lake has screen time. He's not credit only.
So we've got Method Man in this episode.
Interesting.
Steven Weber is in this episode.
Maybe I'll watch a Wings while I'm falling asleep tonight.
I bet you will, you weirdo. Gloria Rubin is in it as well, but you know, whatever. We've got Chester Lake. It's been so long. I missed you, Adam Beach.
I know. Well, hopefully it's a Lake-isode because we need to find our next Much My Benson at the Movies after the one we're about to do. So maybe we'll be able to do Smoke Signals or another Adam Beach movie.
Obviously, our movie club episode that will have dropped, like a week and a half before this, will have been about Desert Hearts. As has been established, we are a Patricia Charbonneau podcast.
If Patricia Charbonneau and Adam Beach made a film together...
Oh, God. We'd be in heaven.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's Patricia Charbonneau with multiple episode director Helen Shaver, the two of them in a lesbian relationship. Yeah. It's a beautiful movie. Adam has not seen it yet.
No, I have not. I'm looking forward to it.
Because we have not recorded that, even though when we're talking about this, it will have dropped. Yeah. Because that's the way love goes.
Exactly. That's the way editing this podcast goes.
Yeah. So...
Well, Josh, do you want to thank our patrons? Because we are extremely grateful. Of course, we have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/munchmybenson. There's some extra goodies there. You can watch video of the podcast if you want to see Josh and my haggard faces.
Haggard
you can get
faces.
Unedited versions, which will have
a lot of extra content. Yeah.
If you want to have Josh looking askance at his wife gets home.
Yeah, that definitely happened in this one. So praise be to Jeremy S., Jacqueline O., Pedro H., Amy Z., Emily L., Nikki B., Louise M., Whitney C., D., I don't want to butcher your last name, but you know who you are, Tony B., Zach B., Jessica W., and Barry W.
You guys are awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. You all make this...
more possible.
Better. Yeah. So, thanks, patrons. Yeah. Thanks, munchies. It's not expensive to join.
You can also... we have some merch available now. It's on Zazzle, but the links will be on all of the Munch My Benson stuff. So, in the show notes and on our website, etc. At the moment, there's only a couple items for sale, but that's going to be growing as I figure out how to do image editing on my computer that I just upgraded.
It'll grow just like the bartender's dick whenever he's...
not around a woman with child.
Not around a mother.
I guess he's not like Ted Cruz. He's not a MILF guy, so... So, yeah.
Ted Cruz isn't a MILF porn, people. And he accidentally... was it retweeted or liked?
He liked something.
But it was a, quote, staffer.
Yeah, of course. It's always a staffer. Of course, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at MunchMyBenson. On Reddit, it's r/MunchMyBenson. Our website is www.MunchMyBenson. And our
.com.
Yeah. We didn't buy the .tv or the...
or .xxx.
.org. Yeah. We should have gotten .org. You can also email us directly if you'd like to. That's munchmybenson@gmail.com.
We also will have recently been on Fuck My Work Life again, where we ran roughshod over the podcast.
Yeah, we completely took over the podcast.
I don't feel like Jay or Kay were able to speak because the two of us just spoke for like an hour and 20 minutes. I feel so bad for Kay for having to edit that mess of an episode. But I'm sure that Kay made us look better than we should have, because that was a fucking mess and it was not their fault. That is out there. Please go listen. Please help them out.
Hey, it was still fun.
It was fun, but it can't have been fun for them. I can't fathom how it was. Although we did end up talking about after, I don't know if you're still on the call afterwards, but Jay realized that we worked at Spider House and realized that Spider House has been like the subject of two weird, like haunted Austin podcast episodes that he's listened to. And I was like, oh yeah, we worked there.
I remember when that fucking place almost burned down, and then it didn't, and I was so pissed.
Wish it had.
But guys, I think it's time to get out there and munch your youth, but with consent, okay?
Noah. Tell them that they're wrong. Tell them that they're wrong. Baby, why aren't you telling them that they're wrong?
Gwen, listen to me. You need to tell them what really happened.
What?
That you filed a false police report.
Oh, God, no.
The sex we had was consensual.
I married my own rapist.
I loved you. You never had the time of day for me before that. It all turned out all right. I made you feel safe. You fell in love with me.
Do you know how I feel right now?